Hello, listeners, and thank you for joining us for our third and final episode in our series of podcasts dedicated to our production of What We're Up Against by Teresa Raback. My name is Patrick Torres. I'm the artistic director here at Raleigh Little Theater, and I just can't tell you how thankful I am that these podcasts are reaching you and that you've shown interest in them. If you haven't gotten to listen to the other two podcasts in this series, I encourage you to go back and listen to those after you finish this one, as taken together, they just give us some really great insight into the world of the play and the characters in the play. So for today's episode, the director, Heather Strickland, and I are talking to State Senator Jay Chaudhry, who works here in Raleigh. And this was a fantastic conversation where we really got his perspective on some of the politics that are at play in the play and here in our state of North Carolina. And he even gives us some advice on the things that we can do to help ensure that we continue the fight for women's equality. So without further ado, we'll get right to the interview. I hope you enjoy. All right, listeners, so we're here. Heather and I are here with Senator Jay Chaudhry. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great being here.
We appreciate having you and just your participation in the podcast and helping us really dive into this play and how it is very relevant for today for our audiences. So I'll let Heather kind of start with the interview questions.
Well, yeah. So first of all, Jay, thank you from me as well. I greatly appreciate your support in this project. And, you know, tell us a little bit about your journey in public service and why you're connected to the arts.
Yeah. So it is. It's great being down here in the bowels at the bottom of the Raleigh Little Theater. you know, my journey is one that has been rooted in public service here in North Carolina. I've had really the honor and pleasure of working at the highest levels of all three branches of government here in North Carolina, including for two of the most respected statewide officials, then former Attorney General, now Governor Cooper, and former State Treasurer Janet Cowell, which is how you and I know each other, Heather. And part of the reason that, or really the reason that I went into public service was because I've seen public service as a way to give back to this country. Both my parents are immigrants to this country, and they've had the opportunity to achieve the American dream. And the other reason is really just the love that I have for the state of North Carolina, something that my parents have instilled in me, in my family, really based on just great progressive leadership here in the state. And then, you know, with regard to your arts, as our whole family is involved in the arts. I'm actually the member that kind of trails behind them in the arts. My wife serves on the Raleigh Little Theater Board with you, obviously, Heather, and is also on the North Carolina Arts Council. Both our children have attended theater workshops here at Raleigh Little Theater. They both play piano, and our youngest son, Neil, is also a prolific drawer. He's also going to be starring in a play of Cinderella that another theater here in town is going to do, and so we're super excited about supporting the arts. And, you know, lastly, I'll just say is I think for Raleigh to be a great, vibrant city, we need a great, vibrant art scene, and that's what we have with so many avenues and options here at the art, especially with the Raleigh Little Theater and what it provides here for the city.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree with that. Yeah. So tell us a little bit from your perspective the reality of women in politics right now and what they're up against before we dive into more of your reaction from the script itself.
Yeah, so it's a complicated question, but I think one that I think we have to remind ourselves that women only obtained the right to vote through the 19th Amendment less than 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the makeup of legislatures, both at the local, state, and national levels, women today comprise one out of every four elected officials. And in North Carolina, even though the percentage of women in the state are roughly 51%, it's very similar in North Carolina. In the legislature, one out of every four legislators are women too. And, you know, I think the question is, you know, why is that? What are the challenges for women? And as we were talking earlier, I think the general belief is that because women tend to be more focused on family issues, they tend not to run for office. But if you really look at empirical evidence, It's really this notion that men act as political gatekeepers. They don't tend to recruit outside of their own network, and so as a result, women don't get recruited to run for office. But once women do enter and decide to run for political office, they have an equal, if not better, chance of success in winning the office that they run for. And so I think that's something that's important to remember.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, understanding that that's the reality of the world that you're currently a part of, in reading this script, you know, what were some of the things about this story that we're telling that jumped out at you, and what were some of those parallels that maybe you didn't see before but saw kind of when you started to dig into the story?
Yeah, so the story is a dark comedy. It's a powerful story. It's a story in which Eliza is clearly very confident and very talented architect, but obviously experiences a lot of roadblocks and clear sexism in her workplace. And I think there's also an interesting side story in the relationship between Eliza and Janice, her coworker, the other female in the play, who tends to be more deferential and more patient. And as I was reading the play, I was thinking about the expression that has become very popular this year, is "nevertheless she persisted." And, you know, that's a phrase adopted by the feminist movement this year that came about as a result of U.S. Senate Majority Mitch McConnell essentially silencing U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren at the confirmation hearing for U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And I think in a lot of ways, Eliza kind of embodies that expression of "nevertheless, she persisted."
Mm. I really appreciate you bringing that up. As a matter of fact, when that news story broke, I knew that I was already directing this show. It hadn't been issued publicly quite yet, but I had sent Patrick an email at that moment, and I said, I realize what you have just given me to do in this current setting, and it feels amazingly relevant. I'm curious, Patrick and I have had a lot of conversations about the differences in what men and women will walk away from with this show, understanding that I think women are going to have a very different takeaway than some of our male audiences are. From your perspective, and you are one of the few male perspectives that are being brought to this podcast, what do you think you'll walk away from when seeing the show or even having read it?
Look, I mean, I think from my perspective, theater and arts really provide an opportunity to engage in continued self-awareness. So just as someone who is a male in a very male-dominated world of politics, it's a reminder again of the work that needs to be done in trying to bring about gender equality. But I think from a larger perspective, it is also a reminder of issues that are important to me and the work that I do in the General Assembly. So, for example, equal pay for equal work. You know, in North Carolina, our gender inequality ranks 39th in the country. Women are paid 82 cents out of the dollar here in North Carolina. Women of color are even paid less. But as we were talking about earlier, it is a real reminder that in many ways the only way to kind of change these systemic challenges that we face are to have more women at the table and electing more women to office. I will say that there is a line that really resonates, or a couple of lines that really resonates, and I think it'll resonate both for men and women, is the line that Eliza says near the end of the play, where she says, "It wasn't supposed to be like this. They said it wasn't like this anymore. Why is it still like this?" And as we were talking, I mean, the play was written a number of years ago, but it's amazing how much the themes of those play are probably even more applicable today than at any time before.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, I think I think we talked about some of the issues that have arisen in politics, but I think given the number of news items that have come out about individuals that have been, that women that have alleged sexual harassment, you know, whether it's Harvey Weinstein, the political journalist Mark Halperin, senior editors at National Public Radio, it seems like there's a new event new outset of allegations coming out every day. I think it probably, I suspect there'll be multiple tipping points on this, but in many ways they are providing a teachable moment for us to have those conversations around our workplace and at home. And as you and I talked about, I mean, given the overlay of those current events along with this play, I mean, I think it really provides a really great opportunity for us to have conversations that we may be really uncomfortable in having.
Mm-hmm. So going back to a comment that you made earlier about the importance of women being at the table, mm-hmm. as policymakers themselves, can you talk more about why that's so important, and how does the conversation change when there is gender equity within those conversations?
Well, look, I mean, one of the things that change by having more women is I think we end up making better policy, to be honest with you. There's a historian, Francis Fukuyama, famous historian, that wrote an article back in 1998 that argued that if we had more women leaders, we'd be in a less conflict-prone world. But it's interesting. I mean, again, if you look at the studies of women leaders versus male leaders, women tend to be more problem solvers. Men are more problem makers. Women elect to run for office based on a specific issue that drives them. Men tend to run for office because they're fulfilling a lifelong dream. I would argue in this political environment where it's really difficult and really hard, we need a lot more problem solvers than we do problem makers.
Oh, that's great. I agree. Yeah. Did you find yourself identifying with any character in the story at any given point? I know it's hard to fully identify with any of the characters because they are all a bit flawed, but I didn't know if there was a particular one that maybe you saw some hope in.
I to be honest with you, I don't know if I identified with any characters. I mean, I think there are bits and pieces of the characters that I could identify with, and maybe the author of the play had kind of come up with these characters so that individuals could identify with bits and pieces of them. I mean, I'm someone that is by nature kind of patient and willing to play the long game. And Janice appears to portray that character somewhat, but I think she's also very deferential in that way. And then I think Eliza is probably viewed as being someone who's very ambitious in trying to move up the firm, but then at the same time is also rightly complaining about the fact that there's work that's not been given to her and is not treated fairly compared to a male colleague. So I wonder whether, again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I think that the play has characters that portray it that are characters that are not likable in many ways, but it also, I think the complexity of the characters also give the audience members a lot to think about when they leave. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that was designed on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to continue that conversation.
Yeah.
I'm curious, from all your work, you know, running campaigns and being in the General Assembly, just specifically thinking about the women of North Carolina, I mean, what are they up against? I mean, what are the things that women here are really caring about right now and policies that they're trying to move forward?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think women today are very concerned about the political environment and just the way women are portrayed, to be honest with you. I mean, I think what we saw with the Women's March in right after the new president was sworn in, I think were really a reflection about concerns that women have around women's rights issues, for example. And so certainly in the North Carolina General Assembly, and I think at the federal level, there are issues that are important to them, whether it's issues around reproductive rights or whether it's issues around equal pay for equal work. It may be issues even around making sure that we have paid family leave, because those are issues that also affect women. And, you know, to answer your question as to, you know, what are the challenges that they face, I mean, I think the challenges that women face are the ones that we talked about earlier. It's just, I think there's a real desire for women to now get into the political arena. And I think a lot of women are trying to decide what is the best way they can go about to do that and what organizations are available to provide that support for them. Mm-hmm. But I think we will see a record number of women running both at the local and local office and state level this year.
You talked also earlier a little bit about the support that is needed to bring more women into this field. Are you starting to see a shift in that? I mean, we're seeing more women potentially running, but are there also groups that are supporting those women and people that are supporting these women as they enter that?
There are. I mean, I think, as I mentioned, the statistics aren't great as far as the number of women we have that hold office in North Carolina or even nationally, 1 in 4, but the upside is, as I mentioned, is we're going to see a record number of women running for office. And so in Virginia for the state house races there, they have an election coming up in November. You've seen a 75% increase in female candidates now that are running. And for Lillian's List here in North Carolina, an organization that that recruits, trains, and supports progressive women, they've reported more than 200 women expressing interest in running for office. Typically that number is 20 after an election year. So I think we're going to see a lot of women. I think we're going to see a lot of great women running for office this year.
So, you know, we've talked about this sort of swell around these sorts of conversations of women's rights and more women running. Is this what is needed to really start to create those change? Is there hope? Are these things going to start to shift because of this conversation? Or is it that there's such a swell right now that it almost feels paralyzing and you know, change might be hard in those sorts of situations?
Well, I mean, change is always hard, and I there's so much change that's going on in the political environment now. But look, I mean, I'm an optimistic person by nature, and I am very hopeful that the groundswell that we're seeing now, that is a combination of what we're seeing politically, coupled with what we're seeing taking place around the Me Too campaign that we talked about. I mean, those are really powerful forces now, as I mentioned, that I think could represent multiple tipping points. And I think the result will be that we are going to have a number of women that are going to be engaged at all different levels in all different spaces, whether it's in politics or whether it's in advocacy. That will start today and will continue. I mean, I think about my own daughter as someone who is a fifth grader, and the civics lessons and the role models that she is able to view and model herself after that did not exist 25 years ago. And when I see our children, I see our girls, and that I see that generation, you can expect nothing but great things from those young girls as they become women leaders.
So just as a final thought, of course, unless Patrick has other things, as an artist, I would love your advice, as an artist that has this platform to tell these stories and to sort of raise up these issues, what would your advice be to us and the work that we do to help you do your job and what you do?
Yeah, so look, I think that making sure that we have arts funding going forward through the General Assembly is hugely, hugely important. I think part of the magic of this state is really having this incredible, creative, innovative ecosystem for artists, and we have to do everything that we can to make sure that we support it. It's important to point out that it's not just only about making sure that we have a creative ecosystem, but it's also about great economic development. So, in North Carolina, the creative class supports more than 340,000 jobs here in the state that generates $14 billion. In earnings. And so it's not just only about the arts, but it's also about jobs too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's great. And I wonder just what you would say to any of us who maybe aren't inclined to jump into to running for a public office. What can we do? What can we as individuals do to help support the policies and things that we believe in?
Yeah, so one of the things I'm a really big proponent of, and it was interesting because it's kind of juxtaposing this play with the recent play that was done by the Raleigh Little Theater, Grace for President. But there was a question that First Lady Cooper had asked a girl, a panel of girls, 10th, women, 10th graders and 5th graders about whether they knew their state and local officials. And one of the things that I try to talk to constituents and citizens a lot about is while it's important to pay attention to what's happening nationally, and it's hard to avoid what's happening nationally, it's, I think, equally, if not more important to pay attention to what's going on at the state and local level. So, you know, read the paper, get to know who your city council member is, get to know who your state representative is, your state senator is. Those are the folks that are frankly arguably making a bigger impact in your lives. They're clearly playing a role in how you're going to fund the arts, right, going forward. And so, you know, those are really important elected officials to pay attention to.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, appreciate it. Thank you for having me. It's a really great to be here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right, everybody. So I am sitting here with Heather Strickland again, now having completed all three interviews for these podcasts. And I think we both feel a little overwhelmed by the amount of information that we were given and how much we've learned about the play. Do you have any reflections, Heather, on these interviews and how it may have changed any of your opinions about the play?
Absolutely. I mean, I almost feel like a whole different person after going through the set of interviews, which has been incredibly enlightening, not only for understanding the story that we're about to tell, but also kind of my own responses to it. You know, I think we all need to continue to be open as we continue to kind of walk through this adventure that is this show of we're going to keep growing personally through this, which is exciting to me. I certainly have already been struck a few times at my own behavior and my own responses and gone, oh, wow, that's because I have been socialized to accept some of these things that shouldn't be acceptable.
Yeah. Well, for me, I just keep being stirred a little bit by, you know, I think when something is described as like a feminist piece of art or feminist theater or something like that, I think that it's easy, or it can be easy, as someone who identifies as a man, to disengage from that or to see it and appreciate it, but not let it be affecting as a human being. And I saw the play years ago, and it has stuck with me. It's one mm-hmm. of the reasons I thought about it and wanted to put it on the season, because it still sticks with me. But after talking with everyone, you know, I just feel like it's important for us men, I'm talking to you, mm-hmm. those of you who identify as men, I think it's important for us to see it and to not be dismissive at all, or to just think, oh, that's a problem they experience, and so I'm just going to like reverently watch it and let them have their experience, the people who identify as female. And because it's asking us to see them. Mm-hmm. It's asking us to see women in a way that is like great theater. It's funny, but it's also assaulting, and it's a ride, you know, it's mm-hmm. a journey. And I think that just hearing the folks that we interviewed just makes me think differently about the play, that it's not only like a mirror for women. Mm-hmm. It is definitely something that we as men should see and should ask questions about and should engage in dialogue about, and really listen to how women who see this play respond to it. I think that's going to be a critical piece of what I hope people will walk away with. Like, even if you don't come with a woman, seek someone out that's seen it and say, how real was that?
Yeah.
What was your perception of that? Let's talk about what you face at work.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that people will do that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a really, I mean, I love hearing your perspective, especially on the other side of all these amazing conversations that we've had, and also that call to the men that do come see this show. And I think you know, that also for the women that come see this show, there is going to be an emotional response. I think that many women will be shaking their heads, yes, 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 as they see this story and know and have probably they themselves experienced many situations like this. But I also think there's moments of personal reflection of when many women may kind of watch this and go, oh, I have sometimes contributed to us not being able to break through some of these systematic or socialized sexist issues, and not to judge those feelings. And, you know, I think that that's something that we should all be comfortable in the safe space that is theater, is to be able to feel these things, to wonder about our own behavior, and take that as an opportunity to learn and personally grow rather than to judge who we are. Because if nothing else, theater is that space where we all get to experience different things that are outside of who we are and take that little piece with us as we leave.
Absolutely. And how do you feel about being the first show in the renovated Gatti?
Oh, it is. I am so incredibly honored to be the one that's going to launch this new wonderful piece of this historic theater. It certainly feels like I'm a part of something special, as I always feel when I am here at this theater.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait to see the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to do these interviews with me, but also just agreeing to direct a script that made you mad when you first read it. I think some of that passion will come across in the way that you stage it, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you. I'm grateful that you're pissing me off.
All right. Thank you, Heather. Okay, listeners, there you go. That was our final podcast in support of our production of What We're Up Against by Teresa Rabeck. I'm really excited that you tuned in and listened to these shows. I hope that all of these podcasts gave you some insight into the play and that it has made you excited to come see the play. So please, please, please come see the show and bring a friend. It's a show that you're going to want to talk about after you see it. We'll also be hosting quite a few community conversations around the show, and all that information will be available on our website. I wanted to remind you that the show opens on January 12th and runs through January 28th, and it is being performed at Peace University in their Leggett Theater because our Gatti Goodwin Theater is still under construction. So we'll look forward to welcoming you there. We thank Peace University for being such gracious hosts and for having us over there. And I want to thank Heather Strickland for doing all these interviews with me and just for directing the show. She's assembled a stellar cast and a stellar production team, and we just couldn't be more excited to get this show open. So I hope you'll join us, and I'll see you at the theater.